This episode of Here Be Monsters contains references to sex and death, mostly with invertebrates. Consider yourself warned.
I used to live in a small town in the Pacific Northwest, the most overcast town in the lower 48, nestled under Canada on the Puget Sound. I lived in an old house that was isolated from the other houses by tangles of blackberry bushes and a field. It was on the edge of a small forest, and just a block from my front door was a path that was permanently in the shade. It wound serpentine between the trees, branching off to secret outlets into the city. And for what the forest lacked in acreage, this little patch of trees seemed ripe for creation myths and origin stories. On today's show, I want to share with you something I saw once that really bothered me, and I want to share how I've come to think about it now, you know, like in a spiritual sense. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and for 10% off, visit squarespace.com and enter the code MONSTERS at checkout. A better web starts with your website. And if you haven't been to the podcast website for a while, you might notice that things look just a little bit different. Towards the end of season 2, Here Be Monsters switched away from the old blocky eyesore of a website over to a Squarespace template, and seriously, the difference is night and day. One thing that we're really excited about right now is that we're using Squarespace's e-commerce tools to build an online web store where soon you'll be able to buy HBM swag, you know, like stickers and stuff. It's really easy to use, and Squarespace's e-commerce comes with every plan. So check it out, squarespace.com, and enter the code MONSTERS for a special deal. Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
a disembodied muscle.
The podcast about You'd be surprised by how spongy the ground is here. It's almost always damp. The moss grows uninhibited, and wet animals like slugs and earthworms and little snails like to make their homes here. And in the winter, walking through the fog is like being spritzed with a spray bottle. When the fog lifts, a storm that will last an entire week will sweep through and wash away everything that isn't latched to the ground. It's after these storms that all that moss really lets itself go, just creating blinding landscapes that range the entire gamut of green, flecked by the orange of the blossoming bits. The moss fails to discriminate from the ground or the rocks or the tree bark or any other surface that can stay still for more than 3 days. But now, winter is turning to spring, and spring is starting to give way to summer, and one of those week-long rainstorms has just passed, and my legs are feeling restless. So I find a small flashlight and wander out into the warm, damp night. The permanently shaded trail is ahead of me, and I start walking, around the familiar bends, over a little bridge, and past the giant horizontal tree, and then off into a part of the forest that I've never yet discovered, using my flashlight to avoid the puddles and sidestep the worms who are fleeing their flooding homes. I like to look up at the trees while I walk, watching the shapes of countless pine branches become silhouetted by the red-orange glow of sodium streetlights lighting up the clouds above. Sometimes I think it's in human nature to forget that we're animals and that we're not exceptional in every regard, because in truth there are plenty of species who couldn't care less about humanity. Our whole species could up and disappear, our writings, our teachings, our art could disappear along with it. And they'd spend as much time worrying about our absence as we spend worrying about the culture of mastodons. Rounding a corner in the path, I realize that despite being no more than 3 blocks from my house, I'm completely lost in the forest. Below me, the flashlight circle meets a shiny streak on the path of dirt and pine needles and gravel. This trail of mucus is flowing slowly from behind an oncoming slug. It's medium-sized, brown, and wet-looking. To me, a slug looks like a disembodied mussel just sitting there by itself, naked on the forest floor. Their antennae hold these little, light-sensitive patches of skin, and this one's probably a European red slug, a species brought to America by some forgotten cargo ship of vegetables or something. It was just under 100 years ago when a naturalist first discovered a European red slug in the front yard of a home in Seattle. He took it back to his laboratory in California to study it, and there it sits today, preserved in a glass jar. It was a novelty back then, but today the European red slug omnivorously devours almost everything it finds, from earthworms to mushrooms to strawberries to dead squirrels, and often they'll arrive in legions to carpe the diem on some poor gardener's cucumber patch. But this little slug soldier is lost, and it's smearing out that trail of sticky mucus as fast as it can down the path, fleeing from something in a hurry. Many streaks of slime converge here across the dark path, at a point where now nothing remains. It's obvious that slugs, dozens of them, were here not long ago, and I imagine some grandiose dinner party of slugs with guests of distinction and fine food and drink. Its proportions must have been something similar to the stories I've heard of feasts held by the ancient Roman aristocrats, with sweetened drinks and many coursed meals and spices from around the world, cloves from Arabia and oregano from Greece and peppercorns from the Far East. These Roman feasts, fueled by wine drunk from lead-glazed pewter chalices, brought on new vigor in the participants. And what remains here are the discarded utensils, just a big old pile of mucus. And judging from the trails left by each slug, I can see how each animal, drunk on the flesh of the meal, left the dinner party with others in groups of two, three, five, or more. Following the trails with my eyes, I find, laid out on the path before me, the single most complex and gruesome scene of hedonism I've ever seen in my life. It just looks like the ground is moving beneath me. Dozens upon dozens of these strange reddish-brown slugs cover the path. Their shiny muscular bodies are all wrapped up amongst themselves, and at my feet I watch as one shameless couple meet in the path and turn tail to head, to form a very capital letter O by my feet. Twos and threes and whole clods of the animals crawl over each other just for the chance to wrap their penises around their partners and mate for an hour or more, to pass off their sperm to one another and collect the sperm to fertilize their own eggs. And I watch as each animal's male organs slowly emerge from a flap just under their neck on the right-hand side. Slug penises are completely white and surprisingly long and translucent. It reminds me of a miniature scene of Caligula's palace. Caligula was the despised young emperor who ruled Rome for just 4 tumultuous years in the early days of the Common Era. His contemporaries said he chased after married women and spent lavishly just for the sport of it. And once the empire was completely in financial ruin, he proposed a remedy by turning his royal palace into a brothel. The couple at my feet will be mating for some time still. Their penises are now fused together in an embrace. They slither, seemingly enamored with each other's bodies, caressing with their antennae and mouth parts. A nearby couple is finishing up, attempting to separate their genitalia, but they're stuck together. Unwanted adhesion is a common problem with slugs, and they've devised a solution to it. And what they do is that when they're stuck together, they will just eat their penises and become permanently female. My flashlight rests on another pile of slugs, though these are less amorous. These four crowd around each other, and they twist and roll over themselves, trying to eat what little remains of one of their comrades. All that's left of this slug is just some yellowish, thick goop stuck to the path. Needless violence was Caligula's trademark. He championed the Romans' adoption of death by a thousand cuts. It was said that once, while attending a gladiatorial match in an arena, Caligula became bored because there were no more prisoners to execute during the intermission. So he ordered an entire section of the crowd to be thrown in and eaten by wild animals. More and more trails of slime lead off into the forest, and I follow them. My flashlight finds the exact same scene repeated time and time again, and once with a very large slug still very much alive who squirms silently in agony as it's eaten by three or more of its kind. It's already mortally wounded, and there's really nothing I can do. Looking closer, I see many more splotches of slime dotting the path, all evidence of more slug murders. In human terms, this is really a cannibal feast, or an orgy, or some kind of foul gladiatorial blood sport, all wrapped into one and all in miniature. And watching it from above makes me feel almost like a god, you know, watching creation slowly unwind and unravel itself, but through the moral framework of human squeamishness. In this moment of omnipotence, I feel the overwhelming and unnerving urge to crush all of them out of vengeance and disgust, and I don't do it, but I just feel really nauseous. Caligula probably never forced people to worship him. He just gave them that option. He had statues made of himself and had them put in the temples alongside Vulcan and Jupiter and Minerva, and people did it. People did worship him. Regardless of all this, it's apparent that Caligula's empire was in economic shambles by the time he was gruesomely assassinated by his bodyguards at age 28. Of this dull fray, I find one more slug, one single slug, far removed from the scene. In its mouth parts, it holds a single pink, giant flower petal. Slowly, it turns the petal around in its mouth, and it's just a harsh contrast to everything else, almost like a literal cliche, like a picture that runs in the newspaper of a daisy growing in a trash heap, or a lost teddy bear in the wreckage of some bombed-out building in some nameless, war-torn country. And if I didn't know any better, I'd say that this pacifist animal was watching the orgy unfold, just taking mental notes. It might be the slug historian who writes a biography of the slug emperor's insanity, telling of the violence and sex imposed upon the poor and weak, but slugs are nearly blind, relying mostly on their senses of smell to navigate the world. And maybe this slug takes something meaningful from that. Or, more likely, it probably doesn't think much of perversity or history, especially when it's measured by modern first-world human standards of rightness and wrongness. It's just a slug, after all. But thoughts like these don't really make for good stories, and I like good stories and good history, and you know, you probably do too. It's everything you know, it's everything that you think you remember. History is just a big collection of stories. And stories are made up of lies, and lies are just truths that have been lumped together for convenience's sake, filtered through the mangled bunches of neurons that we have that are so obsessed with easy storylines and autobiography. I think that we have this ability to create stories so that we can make sense of a world rife with unintended consequences and unplanned coincidences and rules with exceptions and statistical clumping and all manner of things that muddy the waters. But stories are the things that, to use a metaphor, would turn white noise into music. And in this brand new season of Here Be Monsters, I'm really excited to say that you will hear stories of love and death and drugs and kidnapping and ghosts and fish and skepticism and questioning and sound and sight, and not only from me, but from amazing and under-recognized and talented storytellers and producers who have similar questions about the world. And we're going to try to explore more of these dusty corners of the mind to find out what's been shoved under the rug and find what monsters lie beyond the borders of our maps. I walk back home, back around that bend in the trail, back over the little bridge, past the giant horizontal tree, and I go to bed, then quickly fall asleep, feeling that rare sense of smallness. Smallness on a cosmic level. I feel tiny and completely infinitesimal. Infinitesimal, but not alone. Not alone in this house on the edge of a warm, dark, and wet forest. This episode of Here Be Monsters was produced by myself, Jeff Entman, along with help from our old producer, Bethany Denton. She just joined on as Here Be Monsters' story editor, and that's really exciting. You heard a lot of different music on this episode. You heard tracks from Phantom Fauna, The Black Spot, Lucky Dragons, and from this artist that you're hearing right now, who's brand new to the show. He plays music on his homemade metal drums outside grocery stores in Seattle's University District, and he doesn't have a website where you can buy his music. But if you're interested in hearing more from him, you can get in touch with us here at the podcast, and we'll get a CD to you in the mail. And speaking of the website, there's lots of great stuff up on the website right now. There's a picture gallery that goes along with this episode and a couple of the other ones. Hit us up. It's hbmpodcast.com. You can also like us on Facebook or do a review of the show on iTunes. That's all really very helpful. And last thing. We've never done a listener mail segment on the show before, but it's something that would be really great to start doing at the end of each show. So if you have any questions, or if you have a short story that you'd like to share, or just about anything else that you want to send into the show, there's a contact form. Just go to hbmpodcast.com, click on contact, and we'll get that from you right away and hopefully be able to do some listener mail. Okay, that's about all for now. Here Be Monsters is a proud member of the Mule Radio Syndicate. And if you like this show, you should check out all the other great shows distributed by Mule. That's at muleradio.net. All right, thanks for listening. More episodes soon.